What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Movies and Booze, I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You're very welcome back. Tom Dunn with you, standing in for Sean today on the Movies and Booze special with Marks and Spencer, live from the Royal Dublin Convention Centre. I'm reliably informed that some new people have just arrived from the other convention centre, which... the far less well-known other convention centre. So this is a great place to come to. I was reading a bit on the way in. It's this very historic part. There used to be a Viking settlement. There's Viking bodies found outside the door and stuff. So this is the place to be, 100%. We are moving into the Movies and Booze stage of the show. So we're joined by Brian Lloyd, Fionnuala Jones and Leslie Williams.
Hi.
Now, to avoid my head swivelling off my shoulders, I may need to take the microphone off the stand, which may lead you to believe I'm going to break into song at any moment, but I'm not, so it's all right. Brian, what films are we going to be talking about today?
Really massive gulf in quality. We have one of the best films I've seen this year called Sing Sing, which is definitely going to be an Oscar contender, and then one of the worst films I've seen this year, which is a remake of the 1994 film The Crow.
I think I saw your score on that, and mother.
It was terrible. It's
you don't pull your punches, do you?
Well, like, I mean, I can be honest or I can be polite. Like, you know, pick one. You know,
honest, please.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. It actually made me physically angry. Like, I walked out of the screen, and my shoulders were actually tense, and you know, it's terrible. It's aggressively bad.
You've come to the right place to review it, because I'm going to be able to pass you alcohol very soon.
No, yeah, and I don't drink anyway.
Well, you might start today, yeah. Leslie. What are we going to be looking at today?
We are drinking Pinot Grigio twice. Very different, though, very different. And we're drinking good old-fashioned Fleury, Beaujolais.
Beautiful.
Fancy French liquor.
Great stuff. Are you going to start us off? We start off our first one.
So the first one, and people might be looking at their glass and thinking, is this really Pinot Grigio? Because it's pink. But the word Grigio is gris. It's from the French gris, Pinot Gris. And gris is a French word for light pink, because the grape actually is a pinky colour. And so if you leave it on the skins, like you would a red wine, you get a pink colour. And in fact, this is kind of how Pinot Grigio often should be. To get the white version that we're so used to, which we'll be having later, you need to pick the grapes quite early, and it's very, very young and fresh. This has a bit more flavour, a bit more texture, a bit more kind of, you know, you get those sort of red fruit aromas, and I think it's really tasty, isn't it? And it's from Venezia, so from near Venice, so grapes more around Verona, basically, but it's over the tenors, but it's under the 15, I think, you know. So it's just a really good example. Did you taste it?
I have. It's absolutely delicious. Yeah. Fionnuala, how'd you make that?
I don't have a glass, unless someone can I uncork the bottle, or
here,
is it? Glass. Oh, there is. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's what?
Sorry about that. I don't know how. Standards. Yeah. Please do.
Yeah, I'm not actually going to drink from the bottle, Brian.
I'm going to pour it into the.
Oh, no, there's water in that.
There's water in it. Yeah.
Actually, can I just correct it? It's under a tenor.
Under a tenor. Would you risk?
Yes.
Would I risk it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I trust you.
Yeah.
You don't have cooties, should I?
Yeah. We're going live on air taste. How was that?
Delish.
For you? Delish. Yeah.
Delicious.
Well, Rosie's the thing. See, Rosie works with Indian food, with kind of spices, with all kinds of things, you know.
And that's under a tenor.
Yeah. You know.
My God. What's the view in the room? Very nice. Do you get a bit nervous there when I throw to the room, Leslie?
No. That's my confidence. We know it's all good.
In your wines. Good. The other story going around town this week, of course, is Coldplay.
Yes.
They've been up to stuff in town, have they?
They were playing on Grafton Street. They have a new song out called We Pray. It's a collaboration with a couple of different artists, including Burna Boy and Little Sims. And so there was lots of excitement around town during the week, being like, Coldplay are going to busk on Grafton Street. And they did, but it was just that song. And then they went on their merry way, as they should, because they had a lot of shows to prepare for.
The story I heard is that Chris Martin went for a drink on Grafton Street.
Where?
On Tuesday, right? And said that the street was deserted.
Okay.
And then he got it into his head that we should film a video.
That's definitely what happened, Sean. I love that faith that you have in Burton and Cole.
And then in the meantime, people found out and that's when all the crowd arrived. Yeah, that was a story I heard.
Yeah.
It was from a news talk source.
Yeah.
So, you know, why would I doubt it?
Yeah, no, the gigs have gone down. Obviously, the first gig last night, it seems to have gone down an absolute treat. Like, the coverage has just been
amazing, unbelievable.
I didn't really have, like, a huge amount of interest in going, and then seeing kind of the blanket positive coverage and just talking about the staging and the experience, I'm like, God, I wish I was going. And two really incredible support acts, if anyone is going to the later gigs. Maggie Rogers, who released such a good album this year called Don't Forget Me. She's one of the support acts. And then, of course, Ali Koulibaly, who is an Irish artist and another incredible voice, incredible talent. So go in early. Go in and get your drink. Like, don't bother. Don't leave it too late. Go in and see them because they're so good.
Yeah, they're amazing. Anyone been? Anyone going along? Going on Monday? Excellent. Yeah, everything I've heard so far is great. And he seems like a very, very nice man, Chris, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy, very talented.
He's not too nice.
Oh, I knew there was going to be a divisive word. I knew you couldn't get away with a total clean slate.
No. I'd just be dull.
You'd rather drink bad wine, would you?
Yeah, you know.
Would you not like to go even for the stage?
No, I have no interest.
Okay, cool.
I only know one song, the yellow one.
Oh, God, Leslie, they've moved on so far from there.
I feel like you'd
honestly
think that, though, and then you'd go and you'd know loads.
You'd know loads,
yeah.
You know,
honestly.
Would I? Okay.
Yeah, well,
it's inoffensive. I live right by Croke Park. Like, yeah. I live literally right by Hill 16. The music is, it's very inoffensive. It's very.
That's
fine.
The sort of you, so that's the kind of word you really want thrown in your face when you're recording your new album,
Brian.
Yeah. But it's, is it though? Is
oh
it
man, that's so is inoffensive.
It?
Well done.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, we'll see.
But bring back offensive music. That's what I want. Just after the punk.
See if some of the see if some of the wines are inoffensive later on. With time will tell. We're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more movies and booze and more music for you as well. Stay with us. Now, it is Movies and Booze, and I think we are moving in the direction of our first film, Brian.
Yes.
What one is it going to be?
Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Can I have the good news, please, first? I think we need to start with the good news, if
yeah,
we can.
Yeah, we'll start with Sing Sing.
Yes, please. We have a clip from it. We're going to throw to the clip now.
To die. To sleep. To dream.
This is a clemency hearing for your conviction, 25 to life. Since you've been in custody, you've been involved in the theater program.
All right, gentlemen, let's go.
It's been a program that was established to help people get more in touch with their feelings and truly get some rehabilitation.
I am Gladiator Goliath. I am Spartacus.
I'm Prince Hamlet of Denmark.
And it's turned into something of, I don't know, wonderful.
What part do you play?
From time to time, I do act, like we all do.
So are you acting at all during this interview?
Very good. Yeah. That we got to see it here in the room. For the rest of you listening, I can say it looked great. Brian, what's going on here?
Yeah, so Colman Domingo plays a character called Divine G, who's been imprisoned in the Sing Sing maximum security prison. His main creative outlet is this thing called the RTA, which is Rehabilitation Through the Arts. It's essentially a theatre group in the actual prison. And the people that you saw there, for people watching it here and for people who you heard at home, every other actor bar Colman Domingo is an actual alumni of the RTA program. Okay. They were previously incarcerated and are now working as actors. And it's really just that. It's about them trying to put on a show. It's about them learning their lines, about going through the exercises that they have to do. That I'm sure a person from Navin there will probably have plenty to do in, all that kind of jazz. But it's that idea of, like, really what it's about is the idea of, like, when we think of prison films, we think of, like, Birdman of Alcatraz. Yeah. We think of, dank squalor and, dehumanizing and, they've got to tough it out and all this kind of stuff. You think of Cool Hand Luke, even, for example, And what this does is it basically brings in the idea of there's a great line in this film where one of the inmates says, you know, we come here to do this, you know, to learn our lines and put on these silly clothes, but we do it to keep in touch with our humanity, to remind ourselves that we are human. And that's really what the whole film is about, is the idea of art, be it making it or be it taking it in, reminds us that we are human and that art is the language of the soul. So it's really just about them keeping in touch with their humanity in a place that is fundamentally inhuman. It's absolutely brilliant. It reminded me of Dead Poets Society, the first time I saw Dead Poets Society, that idea of like a group of people binding together through the love and belief in something greater and bigger than themselves. It's brilliant. It's absolutely incredible. It's going to get nominated for Oscars right across the board, right. I would say.
A lot of talk around Colman Domingo. I don't really know him.
Yeah, he was in, I'd say, he's been in a lot of stuff. Like, he's never been a lead necessarily. The one that I know him from that I think he was brilliant in, and he only had a kind of smaller enough role in it, was If Beale Street Could Talk, which he was fantastic in, that he played the father of one of the kids in it and stuff. But yeah, he's been kind of sort of supporting roles, I guess. But in this, I mean, he's front and centre, and he is, you just can't take your eyes off him. Like, and even the fact that every other actor in it is what you would say an amateur actor, but they're all incredible. Like, as in Clarence Macklin, who's kind of like his sort of, he takes him under his wing and brings him through the program and stuff like that. He is incredible. Like, it's so natural. There's such, you know, authenticity in their performances. And like, yeah, fine, they are playing kind of themselves or whatever. It's kind of like Kneecap, that was out a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, they're playing.
I was thinking just that as you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing.
They're brilliant in that.
Yeah, they're playing versions of themselves or whatever, but it's still very convincing. It's still very believable. It's still, you know, you're still compelled. You're still entertained. You're still locked into their performance. So
great. Yeah, and I see you're giving that a 5 out of 5.
It's brilliant. It's one of the best films I've seen this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he'll get the Oscar, Colman Domingo.
He deserves it.
He's going to be playing Joe Jackson in the upcoming kind of slightly cursed Michael Jackson biopic. So I'd say between this and that.
All right.
He will be. Everyone.
A man who's type.
Well, he deserves it. Whatever the Michael Jackson biopic, but for this though, my God, he deserves it. He is brilliant in this. He's incredible. He's so good in this. Yeah. And I really would recommend seeing this, people. Like, even if you don't even care about theater or anything like that, watch it. It's brilliant.
Okay, that's a very strong recommendation, Brian. Has to be said. Fionnuala, I have to be honest, when you said Joe Jackson there, I thought it was the guy who sings Different for Girls. Okay, I just for a moment there, I was thinking he's a very strange choice to play him. But anyway, you know, actors these days. But speaking of actors, our own Barry Keoghan.
Yes.
What's he going to be in now?
He's just been cast in the upcoming Peaky Blinders movie, which kind of seemed inevitable. Like, there was a lot of chat about this online for a long time. So he joins, obviously, Cillian Murphy and Rebecca Ferguson, who was previously announced. I'm going to be honest, every time I come on the show to talk about the Peaky Blinders movie, I say the same thing every time. We know nothing about the plot. I don't know anything about Barry's character. All we know is that it's bringing the family into like the Second World War. They said it's going to be very explosive, no holds barred, whatever. And they're looking to begin production, I think, in Birmingham in September, and it's being directed by Tom Harper, who did the first season of Peaky Blinders. So
now that most people think that was the best season, don't they? So that's very good indeed.
Yeah.
That sounds excellent. Barry Keoghan and Cillian Murphy together.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
What a thought.
Two titans.
It's like
slogging it out.
The Clash of the Dimples, really. a dimple off.
There's your film title.
Yeah,
Peaky Blinders. Clash of the Dimples.
Bring it on. And also, Nikki Glaser and the Golden Globes. This is unsettling me hugely, but go on, tell me
why is it unsettling you?
Because she is most known for this thing called roasting.
Yeah.
Which is really where you take the piss out of somebody.
Yeah, but that's why she's
professionally
perfect for this. She's perfect for this job. So like the Golden Globes has gone through this kind of thing where, I don't know, it's kind of become a poison chalice. Like nobody wants to do it because anytime you do it, you kind of flop, especially in the most recent years. Like Joe Coy did it last year and had a load of jokes kind of taking the mick out of Taylor Swift. And even beyond that, it just wasn't that good. And then he went on and like he blamed his writers, whatever. It was just a calamity of errors. And there were a load of reports that, you know, the Golden Globes were going to other comedians and other people to be like, will you please host? And everyone was like, essentially, no. So Nikki Glaser's confirmed for next year. I think she will be good at this because she's very good at roasting celebrities. I'm not sure how big of a name she is over here. I think she's kind of bigger over in the States, but you kind of got a second wind this year during the roast to Tom Brady. If anyone hasn't seen that, I'd recommend just watching even for her section, because she is very, very good. But the, like the
he's
Golden
an American
Globes,
football player,
yeah,
is he?
The Golden Globes is like you kind of need someone who's a bit
aware of how terrible it is.
Aware of the fact that it's not the Oscars, you know, like that we're all kind of there for a laugh, and like it is prestigious, but it's kind of not anywhere near in comparison to a lot of the other awards ceremonies. Right. So
she roasted Rob Lowe in 2016. It never goes well for people she roasts. Man,
no.
Bruce Willis 2018.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin. They've all had bad luck in their lives. Been roasted by her.
We know the woman is a pattern here. Yeah. Yeah.
So good luck with that, Tom Brady, we say. Right, I look forward to that. We're going to have a quick break, and we're going to return with more alcohol, which is the best news I've given you since Oasis reform. I think it's time for our second wine.
Okay, good. So flavour. We're going to go flavour, right? There's going to be flavour in this because it's Pinot Grigio, and Pinot Grigio is not something that often has a little lot of flavour, but this one I think does. This is actually so ONS have the power to do this kind of thing. They basically commissioned this from a really well known producer in the Veneto again, Arrigo Bidoli. I think Bidoli, I would say it's usually you pronounce the first syllable, Bidoli. I suspect that's what it is. And his daughter Margarita, and they basically the winemakers here, and you will find others of their wines in the market here as well. So they're like, I know their wines, you know. But there's texture, there's flavour, like it's been a Grigio. In its simplest version, is literally denuded of all flavour. They pick the grapes so young, they don't allow any developments, there's no flavour, no texture. It's watery, you know. It's, I think I said this before, it's the lager of wine. But this one, I think, is like a high-quality Munich lager, maybe a one from Bavaria or something like that. It's a proper, flavourful, textured, ripe Pinot Grigio, you know, with sort of a little bit of white pepper on it, a little bit of kind of pear and apple. I don't know. I think it's pretty good. You know,
it's beautiful.
A little
over 10. It tastes gorgeous. Have we tasted it yet?
Yeah. Well, this is actually.
I hate Pinot Grigio, but I love this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's part of the classics range, which is interesting. Yeah. So Marks & Spencer's have a Cote de Rhone, they have a Crémant de Bourgogne, they have a Gavi, they have all these sort of classic wine regions, which they commissioned from good producers, basically, in the area. Yeah. And they have the power to do that because they have so many shops. They can, you know, pay a decent amount and get a good, decent wine.
And how much is this one?
It's about 11, 12, I think, you know.
11 or 12?
Yeah, yeah.
Still a very good value, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're all nodding. Phil, you're kind of our up here wine taster, so if you
am please. I?
Yes, you are indeed. Since about
I wouldn't have guessed this was a Pinot. I know you said it earlier, but I kind of forgot. I wouldn't have guessed this was a Pinot Grigio.
Actual flavour.
It's delish.
Yeah.
So nice.
Yeah. They're all the correct words that I was looking forward to hearing here. Delish.
Yeah.
None of that hint of, you know,
none of the fruit
strawberry stuff.
That Leslie says, delish. That's all anyone
delish.
Wants to know.
Delish.
That's crispy, underripe pear, maybe a touch of kiwi, touch of, you know.
Yeah, that's
delish.
What
you said. Delish. Yeah. 100%. We are also talking about the Venice Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this looks like it should be box office because you have all the stars in the world lining up, haven't you?
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of kind of, this is my favourite time of year, where there are premieres for everything and there are screenings and people are timing the standing ovations, which is my favourite thing. So I think Beetlejuice got...
Timing the standing ovations?
Yeah, so like you can nearly kind of guess the quality of a film like based on how long the standing ovation is. So I think it's kind of anything up from 5 minutes is generally considered good. Beetlejuice only got like 3 or 4 minutes, apparently.
Three or four minutes just standing there clapping is an age.
Yeah, and but apparently as well, there was some kind of reporting that there was some, within the screening hall itself or whatever, within the cinema, the lights started coming down or something, or the lights started coming up rather, and people started leaving, so they reckon it would have actually gotten a longer standing ovation had that not happened. But I don't know, based on some of the preliminary reviews I've read, I'm not so sure. Maria seems to be getting a lot of hype. That's Angelina Jolie's newest one. There's a lot of Oscar buzz around that. I'm not 100% sure what it's about.
Callas, the opera singer. Faye Dunaway had been trying to get a film of this done off the ground, and now Angelina Jolie swooped in and did her out of it.
Yeah,
it's meant to be really good, though. I hear a good
Can I just cut to the chase here? Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt potentially on red carpets together. That's surely a disaster.
This is the thing. Like, obviously, this should be box office in terms of like press coverage and stuff like that. But the issue they're having is for a lot of the international film journalists that have gone over to cover the movies, none of them are doing any press. They're not doing any junkets. They're not speaking to anyone. They're saying that the studios and the PR agents are blocking access to stars. And as you said, Brad Pitt is there as well with George Clooney. they're promoting. The film is called Wolves, I think.
Yeah.
And obviously they're still in the midst of this very, very contentious divorce battle. So I would imagine they don't want any questions about that. So maybe that's why.
I can understand that.
Which I can understand that. But then why would you not just say to PR, be like, do not let them ask any of this. And if they do, cut the interview, as opposed to just not giving any interviews.
But that's the thing, is I've done enough of these film festivals, and what generally happens is you get some looper, right, from a foreign journalist who can barely speak English, and he goes, so divorce? And like they feel kind of trapped. I've seen it happen, like I've seen it around tables, and they feel trapped into giving an answer because they can't, like, because most of those interviews that they do at these film festivals are round tables, so it's you and 10 other journalists.
There's a wine angle as well, you know. She's the enemy of wine. She's trying to...
That's right, Jay. Doesn't he have a thing? Yeah, doesn't he have...
This is why I'm Team Brad, I'm afraid, on this, because they own Miraval, this amazing estate in Provence, and that was previously owned by Sting, was going to buy it, and it's famous for jazz recordings back in the 70s, like many famous jazz albums were recorded there. This amazing estate, and the wines are really, really good. They make a champagne as well, but she sold her estate to an asshole Russian oligarch purely because he would, knowing that he would destroy the wine, basically.
Really?
Yeah. So poor old Brad is there struggling, trying to keep control of the quality.
Wine, for God's sake. Eye roll.
Brad is team wine, is he?
I think so, yeah.
It's the wine I'm worried about, not Brad.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Of course.
Is a little bit of that the round table thing, that you can get, you know, somebody who wants to make a point on any topic.
Yeah.
Whatever. It can be a war.
I refuse to do round tables anymore. They're ridiculous. Because you always get some nut job trying to make a big song and dance of it.
So I can't believe I suddenly feel understanding for Cate Blanchett and Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman and Joaquin Phoenix Lady Gaga.
Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga are flat out talking to people.
Oh, are they?
Because obviously Joker 2 is coming out in October, I think it is. The Todd Phillips sequel to the original Joker, which he was saying is not a musical. They're just communicating through song, to which I say, Todd Phillips, that is a musical, I think.
God almighty. How can they think that isn't a musical?
I don't know. Ask Todd Phillips. His interpretation of the English language is interesting, to say the least.
George Byrne, as I've mentioned very often.
The late, great George Byrne.
Film viewers. One person sings from another. It's a musical.
Yeah, he's
very
right.
Simple. Yeah,
was
100%.
Right. 100%. He was 100% right. That's musical.
What are they thinking of? So that's it. We have that and Maria, the big Oscar buzz, and the Joker film, which you look forward to seeing. After that, they're not really talking to people.
Yeah, that's it.
A bit disappointing.
Not a word.
The planned Britney biopic. Mm. Ooh, now that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, is it? Like, I mean, in another world, in a parallel universe, maybe, but just with the way Britney is at the minute, I don't know if we need this. So for backstory, this is based on her memoir that came out, I think it was it last year or was it earlier this year? Anyway, it's based on The Woman in Me, and there's been obviously lots of talk then around who portrays Britney, because she's an iconic artist, a very iconic celebrity. How do you step into those shoes? Apparently, Britney's current assistant at the minute had gone to the press and said, Felicia Culotta is the assistant, went and said that she'd love Emma Roberts to take up the role.
Yeah.
Emma Roberts would be known kind of for American Horror Story. She's done other kind of bits and bobs like that.
Yeah.
She's a background, she was a child star originally, was on Nickelodeon and did a few other bits as well. So there's parallels there with Britney in terms of being a child star. Emma has said that she'd do it, basically, and she would love to do it, to which I say, no, with all due respect, because I don't know if she has... Like, this is such a loaded role, and I don't know if Emma has the scope as an actress. That's how to say it as politely as possible.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but she seems to think it's her dream come true. She says in all the interviews that, like, she seems to be an actual... You know, natural fit for this.
No.
Yeah, and because like she's grown up listening to The Zone and she knows every word, whatever. And like, again, like the passion doesn't necessarily equal talent. Again, respectfully. And like, I don't know.
Why
I
is
could
she
be
so
wrong.
In the frame?
Why is she so in the frame? She's not necessarily, but I think it's maybe just because this assistant like name dropped her. And look, I will say, if anyone doesn't know what Emma Roberts looked like and you Google her, there's a visual similarity, which Leslie is attempting to show you now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I'd say do they look alike? Yes.
Yeah, they does do. That, okay, yeah, they do. They
Does
do look alike.
Excellent or even good or even average biopic make? No, like you have to have everything. You have to have the cadence. You have to be able to. And look, again, I don't know if they're going to approach this in the way that like they're going to make the actor sing or they're going to just use Britney music. But I am also just kind of like,
Is this necessary? Do we need this?
Is it necessary? Is it all too soon in some question mark in some ways?
And okay.
Especially with how kind of chaotic Britney's social presence kind of remains, and her, again, her mental health appears to be seriously kind of still in question, even though she is quote unquote free. I don't know. I love Britney. I've seen her life. I want the best for her. If she came back to music tomorrow and it was all she wanted to do and that was very clear, I'd be supportive of it. This, I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
Well, the book was a huge hit, wasn't it? And I'd imagine the demand for a film based on the book would be absolutely huge.
And people
as well.
Will go, no matter what I say, no matter who is casting it, people will go out of morbid curiosity, out of enthusiasm for her. So it doesn't really matter. It's going to make a gajillion euro and I will be there as well.
Yeah,
who whether it's Emma Roberts or not, to be honest.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'd say it's going to happen one way or the other. Fionnuala, before we carry on, we're going to be finding out who's won 200,000 in just a minute, which is barely box office.
Yeah.
But before that, I don't know an awful lot about World Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh, me, I do.
Do you?
Yes.
Right. It's in the news.
Yeah.
What's the story?
I don't know what the story
why
is.
Do you
is
watch?
This about the Netflix documentary, is it?
Yes.
Yes,
like
this is going to be nuts.
Yeah.
You're getting very excited now.
It is.
Yeah.
Because he is so... If ever there was a person in the world that was deserving of a public reckoning, it is Vincent Kennedy McMahon. He is a scumbag of the highest order. He needs to be dragged out onto the street.
Yeah.
This documentary is going to do it.
Yeah. Don't hold back.
Oh, no. He is a, scumbag.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, awful human being.
If we could get some context around this, please.
Vince McMahon, yeah. So this Netflix series, it's a 6-part series. It's coming to Netflix September 25th. We have a date. It's called Mr. McMahon, 6 1-hour episodes. And it's basically chronicling his rise and fall of being the co-founder of the WWE, businessman facing very serious allegations later on then of sexual misconduct allegations. It's coming from Chris Smith, the guy who did Tiger King. I think this will be good. And again, you say you don't know a lot about
nothing.
I'm aware of him as a figure. I'm not a big wrestling head. I think this is going to be kind of must watch. And I know Netflix is kind of patchy in recent years in terms of its documentary series, but in terms of the breadth of content that they have, like it's from over 200 hours of interviews with McMahon himself and like family members and people that are associated with him. Like, I think this is going to be not necessarily like good in the sense that I think it's going to be like a tough watch for some people. But as you said, he's kind of... He's a fascinating...
He's the guy who put it on the map, is he?
That was,
He is. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. But it was the method in which he did it. Like, it was just in some of the most underhanded, devious business practices in order to do it. And then how he treated the wrestlers as well. Like,
because,
like, throughout the 80s and 90s, there was massive scandals about steroid abuse and all the rest of it. And then sexual abuse happening in the industry as well. And then into the 2000s and to the 2010s, a lot of those wrestlers that were big and popular in the 80s and 90s, they all started dying. And dying very, very young. Yeah. And again, a lot of that was linked back to the steroid abuse that was happening. And he was like, he was breaking in billions while all this was happening.
Big. Billions.
Oh, it's massive. Huge. It's $1 billion industry. Yeah, yeah. And he was doing this while these wrestlers, who were actors, let's not kid ourselves, these were actors.
Yeah. Where it loses me.
No, but I mean, they were putting their, like,
I'm for a generation of giant haystacks.
Sure, but... Okay, but like when they got clocked over the head with a steel chair and all the rest of it, I mean, you think, okay, they put their hand up and blocked or whatever, but you get whacked in the head with a chair, you'll know all about it. And the same way you get thrown out of a wrestling ring onto a mat, like that's concrete and there's just like a very, very thin layer of like styrofoam underneath it. You'll know all about it. And a lot of these wrestlers were taking injuries and then taking steroids and then muscle relaxers.
And then on top of that, obviously, there's 200 hours of interviews with him. So he felt he was bulletproof, did he?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
This was the thing. He was making... I'm just taking this over now.
No, I'm absolutely happy
He was making this documentary under the idea that, oh God, this is going to be my legacy and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Because WWE was recently sold off into a new consortium that he now no longer has any hand in. So he thought that he was like riding high in this and going to be brilliant. And then in the middle of it, all this...
And they have 200 hours of interviews with him to basically... Yeah. Brilliant. Bring it on. Netflix, bring it on. I don't know whether to go for the wine or the film. I feel like I need the wine, but I think we should go towards the film. I know you're looking forward to getting stuck into this.
Yes, I am. You're going to need a drink after this.
All right.
Because this is what we need. Terrible this film is.
Will we take the clip?
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
We're going to have a clip from The Crow.
What's the first thing you liked about me?
I thought that you were quite brilliantly broken.
You feel like my person?
You feel like my person.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
I saw things. couldn't have seen any of it.
Oh, no.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how that sounded on the radio, but it certainly looked fairly grim for us.
Yeah, it is.
Two people being horribly murdered.
Yeah, there's this trope called fridging. And a fridging is essentially where generally the male protagonist has a love interest, generally a female protagonist. They're murdered in a completely horrific and unnecessarily brutal way. And then that then provides the motivation for the male protagonist to go on to, you know, a big journey of revenge and all the rest of it. There's loads of examples of it. The most recent one I could think of would be like something like Inception. You know, with Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Marion Cotillard, she gets killed and then yada, yada, yada.
Or Death Wish. I mean, that's the obvious.
Death Wish, exactly. Michael Winner's Death Wish, yeah, with Charles Bronson. Yeah, there's another one. And then, like, you could nearly argue Batman is a version of Fridgen as well, because his parents died and all the rest of it. The Crow was originally released in 1994, when this kind of thing was more, I would say, acceptable, and there wasn't the level of sort of media literacy that we have now. This pretty much just copies the entire story beat for beat. So he is this sort of reject singer who is in a treatment center. He meets FKA Twigs. That's Bill Skarsgård, by the way, playing the Crow. The two of them fall in love, madly in love, just completely head over heels in love with each other. She, however, has a dark secret that involves Danny Houston, who is this long-lived demon that's able to tell people to kill themselves, and that they, when they kill themselves, yeah, that's how dark this is. They do it because they're sort of possessed by some weird evil demon, because it's just, the story doesn't matter. It's a terrible film. It's awful. Like, this film is so bad. It's so, so bad. It is terribly acted, right? Bill Skarsgård is like Tommy Wiseau from The Room in this, with the accent and the sort of like... FKA Twigs, she's a great singer, great musician, terrible actor, just couldn't act her way out of a paper bag. Danny Houston, right? Son of the great John Houston, one of the most iconic villains in cinematic history in Chinatown, pales in comparison to his dad. He would be rolling in his grave if he knew what he was doing in this, because he is just hamming it up. The director of this is a guy called Rupert Sanders, who is primarily known for making deeply, deeply problematic films. He made a live-action remake of Ghost in the Shell in 2017. There was a huge controversy about that because Scarlett Johansson was playing a character that was traditionally Asian. There was another film as well called Snow White and the Huntsman, where he got into a relationship with Kristen Stewart while he was married. And
she was like 18 or 19.
And she was like 18 or 19 as well, yeah. And then on top of that as well, he's primarily a stylist. He's not a director. Like, he's more known for doing commercials and stuff like that. So when you look at that, like, yeah, it looks glossy and, you know, it's all kind of, you know, there's a bit of a sheen to it. But the film is just muck. And not only that as well, right? It's a goth, like, you know, The Crow is known as this sort of, like, goth touchstone. How basic do you have to be to put Gary Numan and Joy Division in your soundtrack and think you're doing something really special here?
In 2024.
In the year of our Lord, 2024, yes. we're putting Gary Numan, M.E., yes, into a goth film, and you're thinking, yeah, man, that's really deep cut there. Wow. Or putting Joy Division Disorder when they're running around having a great... Like, that's the level of basic we're dealing with.
Right, you didn't like this. You didn't like this, did you?
Hate it. Sorry, like, and you think, like... I had to pay, and here's another thing, I had to pay €13.50 in the middle of the day. In the middle of the day.
Very good.
2 o'clock, and it was me and one other lad, and he got up halfway through it.
I hate to cut you off in your prime, but go on, give it a mark out of 5 there.
0. Terrible.
Right, we need a drink after that, and we're going to have a little glass of red wine. That was brilliant, Brian. Thank you very much, Dave Bryan.
Off.
Wonderful.
But to happier things.
Happier things.
The wine is lovely. You know. So. We're talking away with the wine here, Tom. Yes,
yes,
let's go.
Yes.
So it's Fleury, right? We're drinking a glass of Fleury, which this is Beaujolais. Everyone's heard of Fleury, but do not necessarily realize it's a Beaujolais village. There are 10 villages in Beaujolais. This is the most famous one because it's the easiest to pronounce. Others being, I have a go here, Morgon, Moulin-au-Vent. They're the top three on Fleury. And then lesser would be Chenas, Cherubert. Not lesser, but just less familiar. Julianas, Brûlis, Côte-de-Brûlis, and Renier. So that's, I think that's 10. But gorgeous red fruits, Gamay is the grape. We can't afford Burgundy anymore. We can afford this. This is about 17, 18 euros. But look, you're effectively drinking Burgundy here almost. I mean, it's, yeah. Texture, red fruit, lovely.
Delicious. And I'll have to turn over to my wine expert now. Fanula, how did you get on with
phone.
That?
Delish.
Delish again. Hey. And our audience said we all enjoy that. Delish. We got one yum at the front and mostly delish.
Delicious. M&S Fleury is from their classic range.
How much again did you say?
About 18.
18. Brilliant. They're all very good value. That is almost it for today. Thank you all very much for coming. Thanks to our wonderful panel. Brian, Fanula, and Leslie, and all of our team over here in the corner, and all our people back in News Talk.
Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.